Believe in yourself, believe in your body. Rock, 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 it's the self-esteem party. Yeah. Everyone, welcome to the Self-Esteem Party Podcast. I'm your host, Alana Johnston, and with me, drinking a smoothie he made, is producer slash husband slash roommate, Norm Sousa. Norm, how you doing? How's the smoothie?
Smoothie's just okay.
Yeah.
You're also drinking the smoothie.
Yeah, Seed City.
It's Seed City?
Yeah, the seeds.
Oh.
And the berries.
Yeah, it's well, do we want to just let everyone know what's in the smoothie right now?
I think so.
It's, you got a frozen banana, some protein powder, spinach, and yes, a mixed berry medley
that is
just chocked full of seeds.
I know what you guys are thinking.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, have you ever found a sexier couple? No, you guys, it's us.
Based on our smoothie, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because we are smooth.
Wait, I thought you just said we were chock full of seeds.
You know it. So, Norm, scale of 1 to 10, how's your self-esteem today?
I think I'm just doing okay. I'm going to straight up say an average 5.
An average 5?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
What can make it higher or lower?
Well, I mean, I feel like I already went up higher.
From earlier today.
Well,
I
woke up really early, not really early, but I started writing really early, and I wrote a couple things, and, you know, they're good first drafts, so I feel pretty okay about that. It's given me a little bit of time in the afternoon to retool some other things.
You feel better because you got the positive feedback about the drafts?
No, that they're done.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's great because then you're not putting your self-worth into somebody else's hands.
You know, I'm trying to ignore the stuff that happened the previous week and move on fresh.
You have to. Your job is weekly in that way. You've got to let it go.
So, whatever frustrations I had the previous weeks, now I just have to. Every start of the week is a fresh... What am I looking for? It's like a
clean slate.
Clean slate, yeah.
Oh my God, Norm, for me too? Like if I bugged you?
Oh no, I don't know about that.
You're going to hang on to it?
Norm, yeah, I'm going to hold on to it.
What's the biggest thing I did to bother you this week?
Oh God, I don't know. Well, listen, no, we had a lot, we were getting some work done around the house.
It actually was a pretty easy week.
Have we brought in Miguel Solano, our gardener, into the podcast universe? We have not mentioned him before.
Miguel Solano, sometimes known as Mike Solano, our gardener, he likes to come in. First of all, he likes to trash talk his other clients' bushes because they didn't use him for the bushes.
Right.
So he likes to trash talk the bushes every time we see him.
Yeah, he gets offended really easily because we didn't
left
do
his
the turf with him.
Yeah, he's left his wheelbarrow here for days. I mean, this guy, any excuse to come back and talk to us.
He's promising us a large rock.
Yeah, that's been an empty threat for a couple of days. I fucking love him. We should get him on.
Yeah, the low water use drip system that stopped
loves a drip system.
Love to blame the plumber.
I fucking love him. And he's hot in his own way.
Yeah, sure. He's got a bit of a thick vibe to him.
Yeah, thick vibe indeed. Norm, what's coming up for you this week? Other than work, what self-care Norm priority things are coming up this week? What are you going to do for you this week?
That's a good question. I've already thought about maybe going to the movies at some point, taking a break. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. What about a hike?
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Once the heat breaks.
Which it already is feeling like that.
Yeah.
Today's really muggy, but... Because
you like to hike and listen to podcasts. It really zens you out.
Yeah, I really... Maybe I'll do it today.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to miss you. The 1 hour you're gone.
I actually left the house with the dog because you recorded the podcast today.
Yeah, furious.
Is that today's guest who you were interviewing earlier?
Yes, who we just recorded with.
Okay.
Who, interestingly enough, clocks in the same as you, but I won't give it away.
Oh, okay.
But I just did.
Well, you just said 5, yeah.
Norm!
And it's Charlie McCracken.
Norm,
did you see how long I was doing? I was holding on to it for a bit, and then I was letting you say it first, but then I was like, well, she's not going to say it. Yeah, it took too long.
Well, I say we get to it.
What are you, Mike Solano in his wheelbarrow?
Honestly, fucking get back here and get your damn barrel and leave. And also, take care of the steps.
Hey, Miguel, pick up your fucking barrel. Or Barrow.
There's kind of a bit of a connection with me and the other guy he brings. I don't have his name.
It's Barrow, right? With a W, like a wheelbarrow.
I thought it was Barrel.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I wonder.
Fuck. We can't edit this out. Yeah. Now that I edit the podcast, you know we can't edit things out.
It's wheelbarrow. Yeah. I don't have my phone to look it up, and I don't really care.
I have my phone, but I just want to live in this moment with you. Okay, let's get to it.
Wheeled barrel doesn't make any sense.
You don't make sense, Norm. And here we are on the podcast together. Somehow, against all odds, we make it work.
Well, hopefully Charlie McCracken can tie this whole thing together.
And he does. Everybody, please help me welcome my guest, Charlie McCracken, right after this break. It's a self-esteem party. It's a self-esteem party. Charlie, welcome to the Self-Esteem Party Podcast. How's your tap water?
My tap water's great. I love tap water.
On a scale of one to water, how is your water?
Water.
Wow, that's sky high.
Absolutely. That's as high as it gets, right?
That's as high as it gets is water.
Water or not water. It's liquid. I can drink it. It's potable.
Charlie,
seems clean.
Let's get right into it. Your shirt's matching the wall. Let's get right into it. You know the drill of the podcast. You listen to an episode. You know I'm coming in with a question of, on a scale of 1 to 10, in terms of your self-esteem, how you feeling?
Well, I need to unpack self-esteem a little bit.
Oh, great.
Just how I feel about myself. Is that generally the definition you're working with?
Yeah. So the way that I do it is, it's not, say if things were bad in your life right now, I for me, don't count that, but rather how I feel about that.
Sure.
So it's like, or my involvement in it. Like, my life's really bad right now and it makes me feel like I'm failing.
Good.
So that's how I measure it.
I mean, not
it.
Good that your life is bad and you're failing.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Good that I understand. I have a handle on what you're talking about.
But yeah, and then the self-love, like, you know, you could have nothing but be like, I know I'm great. So that's kind of how
sure.
I measure it. But if it means something different to you, I'd love to hear that.
No, that's good. I just want to know what the working definition is so that
yeah.
I can match it, because my life is in shambles.
Yeah, Norm always does it. He's like, well, I'm tired, so I'm out of 4. And I'm like, Norm, so what, you get some sleep and you're out of 10?
Yeah, maybe. Well, rest has a lot to do with how we feel about ourselves. I'd put myself at a 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that low, high?
Well, I look at 5 as neutral. Nothing good, nothing bad.
Okay.
You're just like, another day.
Yeah.
I feel fine. That's how I look at it. So if it was 6, I'd feel like, yeah, things are okay.
I'm going to adjust down to a 5.
You are? So you're really right in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's fair.
I'm on the precipice. I could tip either way at any moment.
Well, this is the morning too. So
yes.
When we're recording. So I also find that it's like, sometimes I'll start higher when I record with someone. And then sometimes like in the morning. But then if I record sometimes at 7 p.m., I'm like at a 4. Because I'm like, well, all this shit went down today. And now I feel like a fucking moron. You should have seen me at 9 a.m.
What sort of things went on?
Yeah, it's like, well, it's like, for example, if I got some sort of like a bad audition or career rejection,
sure.
or like a friend got mad at me or something. I mean, for any of my friends out there listening, if you're mad at me, that's on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a friend, I've never done anything.
Oh boy, I've never wondered what my friends were feeling about me, other than whether or not they like me at all.
In general.
Yes.
Yes, I do that too, where I suss it out, where I'm like, are they into me, or is this kind of like a Hollywood be nice type
sure.
of situation?
Yeah. And I have a lot of like, I have so many friends in comedy like you do that
exactly.
are like, oh, are we just associates who knew each other in comedy and have known each other for a long time?
Yeah.
Because if, you know, if there's no effort made, there's going to be no contact from either party at all.
So that's why I've used this podcast as a way to keep up with people that I would see around the theater or around town,
yeah.
but maybe we never had like a one-on-one hang before, but I consider them acquaintances, but I'm like, to me, someone's not a friend until we've had a heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
So at a party, you know, you stow away to the side with somebody and then you just like happen to get into it and it could be about anything.
No. But I understand the concept.
I've never been to a party.
I've been to parties, but I usually do performative drinking. and sneak out with an Irish goodbye as soon as I can.
Performative drinking. I'm usually doing a bit of a show at the party, so I don't have time for the one-on-one.
That's right.
You charge for those.
I don't get into conversations.
Okay, fine. You're at a therapist session, but your friend's there too.
Okay, and then you that have makes hard sense. Heart.
You know, when your friend is also at your therapy session without being asked to come.
You're talking about my marriage counseling?
Yeah, I'm talking about your marriage counseling. Wow, Charlie, you got something for everything. You are on one. How you're coming in at a 6 is beyond me. I'm cruising at a 10 just chatting with you.
Well, that's nice. I'll end it up as a 6 as we go.
You know what? I'll say it hasn't been too exciting lately in general, I'd say. Like, nothing crazy is, like, popping off, but I've been seeing a lot of people, and it's making me feel like I have friends and am liked. So I would say I'm at a 7.
Okay. Socializing helps with that.
The
huh?
social, and it's pretty much all social. Like, the absent 3, that would be the 10, I would say is work-related, where I'm like, I am bored, and I'm trying to do, you know, you work on your own projects in between gigs, but right. you're like, if you're not working on it, you're like, okay, well, that's on me.
Right.
Like, you're like, I have no excuse. So it kind of makes you feel bad.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll have a moment, at least I will, where I'm in the middle of working on something of my own. You just take a deep breath and you're like, oh no, like, yeah. what am I, have I just been wasting my time on
and
this?
And I've been at this for 3 days. Yeah. You're I like, could have been cleaning I don't know, the floors. Man. Yeah. I was like, I did. Oh, I actually did Ryan Asher's character show two, 3 weeks ago. And I was like, I'm going to write some new stuff. I was like pushing myself. And man, I suck. Let me tell you, I used to be great. I used to be unstoppable. And now I'm like, it lowered my self-esteem because I was like, oh, this is a muscle you have not worked in a long time and you don't have as much natural ability as you thought you do. Like, I can sell it. But to create it where somebody else could read it and sell it would be very hard.
Oh, sure.
Do you know what I mean?
I guess like, so, but you can put enough of yourself into it
yeah.
that compensates for maybe the fault of the idea
well,
or the
basically, this
of it.
Is why I don't want to write a script. Because I know sure. I need to work on a new one. And I'm like, I don't want to do it because I'm like, if somebody else reads this and it's not in my voice or narrated by me, it's not going to work. You know
That's
what I
hard.
Mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially like, okay, I wrote a pilot in the pandemic. You know, we all started to work on some stuff.
Absolutely.
Losing our minds. And I wrote it when I was in quarantine visiting my family. You know when we would have to do the 2-week quarantine or whatever?
Yes.
Previous to the vaccine and everything like that.
When you're traveling?
Yeah. And this was in Canada. So they check on you and like show up and make sure you're at your quarantine.
Okay.
They did it to my sister. The Canadian government showed up at my sister's Airbnb.
Goodness.
And my other sister wasn't supposed to be there and she had to hide in a shower.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
So you fooled them. They fooled them.
It was like a crazy $100,000, like some sort of an insane fine. But
wow,
whatever.
Scary.
We lied. We made it out. But I wrote this pilot, losing
my
mind.
Now
we
know
mind.
How Omicron got
yeah.
into Canada.
It was me and my sister, without a doubt. But like, I'm writing it, I'm losing my mind, I send it to a friend to read that I really respect and admire. And the first and kind of only positive note was, well, it's really in your voice. I was like, okay. There's several other characters in this. I'm hoping to get a few more voices.
You're going to have to pitch it as like a Tracy Ullman show where you play all the characters.
Yeah, I don't have a choice.
You're the clumps around the table.
Yeah, exactly. But that was, that had a couple ticks on the old self-esteem. So I'd say now why I'm just a 7 and not higher is because I'm like, I feel back in that place where I'm like having a hard time generating my own thing that can be widely accepted
sure.
or That's understood.
Hard. Yeah.
It is hard. Like, do you have some stuff that you're working on? Do you have things you like to pursue otherwise?
I have, like, I guess I work in more of a compulsive way.
Okay.
Where so the show that I had been working on, AP Bio,
yes.
was interrupted by the pandemic. Like, we had to stop production and lost 2 episodes from our season. And then almost a full year later, we came back for the 4th season
yeah.
and we shot those 2 episodes and did this last season all over Zoom and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had a feeling when that was done that we weren't going to get picked back up again on Peacock. So I was like, okay, I need to keep my writing schedule the same that yeah. I have when I'm working in my Zoom office.
Yes.
I get up and I go, and I started to do that. And I'm like, all right, I have a list of 20 different projects that I have partially completed. And I just ordered them in terms of what's going to be the quickest to finish. What's wow. the most complete? And then I just started going down that list and completing them. And I finished a couple of scripts and I wrote
Charlie. All kinds
of other things like that. And I've been pitching those things around. I got one of them got optioned over at Universal.
Excuse you.
But then it's already been pitched and not sold anywhere.
So, oh, I was going to ask to be in it.
You would definitely.
Let me self tape. Here it is. Daryl, I don't care what you say. That's your baby and not mine.
That. Maybe season two.
Okay. If I got that so there's a bit of an no arc in season in the first two. Season. There's a bit of an arc with the neighbor and her husband, Daryl. Absolutely. And a baby shows up and everyone's accusing everyone of it being their baby. All
right, I'm going to use this for my next pilot.
This is good content. Like when you pulled up beside Jay Leno in your car.
Absolutely. I was on the way here. Jay Leno and I could have raced for pinks. Up Coldwater Canyon Avenue.
Just so everyone knows, Charlie brought that up when he got here, and I said, this is good content for the podcast, and I meant it, so I brought it up.
I did follow him, because we were going the same way, and he got on the
101. He was coming here to my house?
Maybe. He was heading in this direction. I stayed right behind him up on the 101. First of all, I'll say he does not care where the center line is on Coldwater Canyon. He was weaving.
Because you said he was in a Tesla, right?
He was in a so that, midnight blue Tesla.
So that makes it much easier, that weaving and out. Because Mo Welch has one, and I can see the camera, and I was like, oh, you never need to use a signal again. You can see the shadow of all the cars.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I've never even been in a Tesla.
Oh, my God, Charlie, can I tell you? So yeah. The screen is like you see your car, and then all the other cars around are like, shadow black, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a camera, it's mm-hmm. like a simulated image or something. Okay. So it's like you can just weave in and out. You see everything surrounding your car.
Where's
beside
the screen?
It's
like in the dash?
Yeah, like where the CD player would okay. be if it was my car.
Do you have the tape with the wire coming out of it that goes to your CD player?
I did, and it broke, and the Radio Shack went out of business, and I didn't get another one because of Radio Shack. I know. I've had a tough life.
Yeah, I guess I do. Yeah, we don't have, I see those big monitors in some of those cars. That's what
it was like like a computer.
How long do you think until the windshield just becomes that screen?
And you I get mean, to it's those self-driving cars. You always see in future movies where it's like the windshield is blacked out and it's like yeah. the self-driving car. And then it always goes wrong.
I want a self-driving car very
oh
badly.
Oh my God.
I want to be able to turn the front seats to face backward and play a game of cards
I
with the people
never,
in the back.
I want to never drive again.
Yeah.
Ever
when I get
again.
On a highway, I want my car to be able to lock in mm-hmm. with all the other cars on there like a train.
Yep.
And then when we get to my exit, I can push a button and I get shot out.
When I want a self-driving car so I can get some paperwork done when I'm in there. Because yeah. I am at the brim with documents, you guys. I can't get out from under them. Charlie, you see my office paper everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. It's actually a hazard. I'm afraid like your dog is going to get caught underneath the pile.
Yeah, you yeah. were worried when you came inside here, you were like, wait, where's the fire exit? You couldn't
yeah,
see it clearly.
Right, not this much paper. It's very flammable.
Here's a real question. Have you yeah. ever been in a hoarder's house?
In a hoarder's house. I think there's a lot of men in my family hold on to things.
Okay.
And collect things, but they're decent at organizing and it doesn't become a hoarder situation. But like when my grandpa and grandma were moving from their home into a retirement facility,
okay, yeah.
we had to go through his basement and we're like, holy moly, everything
really?
Is very well organized, but there's a lot of things he just held on to.
Like what? Like baseball cards, well, license plates?
No,
like what?
It's more like one unopened thermos. You know, it's like in a box from the 70s.
Okay.
It's like a plaid thermos from
okay.
like the jerk.
Yeah, this is like my mom where she has like closets full of linens for the yeah. two beds in her home.
Yeah, I think it's maybe something about Depression era growing up, and if they find something,
fear
then they
scarcity.
Kept it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he held on to those sorts of things, and he's always like, oh, we used to, when we were kids, they'd like, if you like something in their house, if you said, I like this, they would take a piece of masking tape and write your name on it and put it underneath it.
This is so when they die, you get it? My mom did the same thing. And, then my cousin Natalie swooped in and put her name on a bunch of shit. And I was like, excuse me, this is for the kids. Get the fuck out of here, cousin Natalie.
Yeah, we get first dibs.
Of course we get first dibs. That's why you saw me cover my mouth when you said that. Because I was like, I don't know anyone else whose family is so morbid that they're doing that this early in the game.
My folks right now are like, we're going to do the same thing we did with grandma and grandpa. We're going to move all of our property into your name, into your sister's names, so that we don't own anything. So that if we ever do have to go into a retirement facility, they won't be able to count those things as our property in terms of what we're worth.
Oh my God.
Because a lot of those places, they assess your worth, your net value or whatever, and they base how much you pay on that.
Oh my God, of course. That makes it like taxes. That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but that makes so much sense. That is so smart of your parents. I should talk to my mom about this so I can get my grubby hands on that condo.
Well, my dad is also very much, and I've inherited this, like, impatient about getting work done. Like, everything has to be done.
Well, yeah, your list. Yeah.
He's like, oh, I have to, I also don't want you guys to have to deal with a lot of legal stuff and probate and inheritance. Yeah. You can just have it all now.
That makes so much sense, though. You know, my mom is setting me up for failure. This woman has two secret beds hidden in cabinets. Murphy Beds has two secret beds hidden around and then two actual rooms. So four beds in a two-bedroom condo. If you can just, if that's the beginning. And then my mom has cultural art in corners and walls.
Offensive.
It's not, well, my mom's from Syria, so just hold on. That's why I was like, I should have said that part first.
My mom's Indiana Jones.
Yeah, my mom's Indiana Jones. She has a lot of artifacts.
Laura Croft, Tomb Raider.
But basically, my mom's a real international woman and has traveled a lot and came from Syria. So we have a lot of Arabic art and stuff from Syria and stuff like that. But then she got out of hand. Then she went to too many places and would buy too many things and fill up too many walls. And I was like, okay, mom, now you're trying to act like a world traveler. And you're not. You've only been to these few places, but you act like you lived there for a decade with the amount of art you have brought home from this trip. So that's why I say a lot of cultural international walls in my house from my mom's.
If you looked at my mom's, you'd think that she grew up around a lot of roosters.
My mom has the kitchen is roosters.
Exactly. My mom has about 15 roosters in her kitchen. There's a rooster calendar, rooster photos, there's rooster figures up above the counters.
Now, does your mom have rooster, or not rooster, chefs? Where they're like, today's menu is soup.
No, she does not have any of those chefs, no.
My mom has like
and they're
seven.
Like, pasta.
My mom has seven portly chefs being like, serve today for lunch.
They all look like the Mickey in the Night Kitchen. Do you know that book by Maurice Sendak?
No, what is
it? It's like... it's sort of like Where the Wild Things Are, but
it's instead
about a little boy who goes to bed, I think, hungry. And he's a little nude boy, which is interesting.
Perfect.
He falls through the sky and he lands in, it's sort of a city built of all the packages in his kitchen.
Yeah.
And there are three, like, of Laurel and Hardy. Which one was fat? Do you remember?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, Hardy just sounds like it, but like Hardy.
We'll say that. But there's three chefs that look just like him
in
chef's coats, and they're saying nonsense things. Milk in the batter, milk in the batter. It's very strange.
But
little Mickey falls into the batter, and he gets, you know how Max in Where the Wild Things Are, he has that little monster
the hood
wolf
thing. Yeah.
Mickey has one of these, but it's made out of like cake batter. He's got a whole suit made out of cake batter.
Oh, that's why he has to be naked to get the suit on.
Right. He gets dipped and breaded.
This book is wild. I was going to say my chefs look a little more like Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, sure.
The outline.
Yes.
That's kind of what they look like. Oh, my God. I don't even know how we got on the topic of... Oh, hoarding.
Roosters and hoarding.
Roosters.
That's right.
Okay. And I don't know what this has to do with self-esteem, but one time I was nannying. This is bad. They had three kids and I was nannying and the house was like such a hoarder house that you would find old food in like under like stacks of documents or in bookshelves or stuff like pizza and you know what I mean? Like old bowls of cereal and stuff. And I was like, well, I was too young to know the right thing to do, but what I should have done was called child services because I didn't know that, but I was like, this is bugs everywhere. I was like, this is squalor. You can't, and like stuff stacked up that if you didn't walk ever so still, it will fall on you.
That's scary.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Books and yeah. just, I know I keep saying documents, but people keep a lot of paper.
Absolutely. Like,
you know what I mean?
Every piece of mail that comes
that's
in.
That's yeah.
Like when my mother-in-law lived with us for a while and she put this into my wife where like if it has your address on it, it has to be taken care of like it's a radioactive piece of mail.
But what about non-for-profit that send for donation stuff all the time?
If it has your address, they're going to get you. Someone's going to get you by going through your garbage.
That's in front of your house with your address.
They know where we live. It's right here.
Like, I understand, okay, bank stuff or stuff like that, and you're supposed to, or credit card, you're supposed to tear that stuff up, like something that, or social security, like where there's like information. Yeah. And, you know, you got to keep some things, obviously, but it's like the people that like this, like keeping everything out of paranoia.
Right.
That's what gets me. Cause I'm like, okay, they can find, I mean, we can find anybody. It's absolutely too easy. And then to have them on social media or something like that, they're also on Facebook, but then they're worried about people getting their address. I'm like, what? Listen, I've been Instagram hacked by a crypto bot. So I know
it's recently? Serious stuff.
About a month ago.
Oh, I've never been hacked on social media and I never will.
You know what? It was my fault. I should have known. It was like one of those messages in the DMs to be like, oh, combine this with your messenger, like Meta. Sure. And it had the Meta logo and everything. But I was like, they wouldn't have DM'd. This would have come in a notification or an email or something. I'm like, they're not DMing everybody.
I can't won't even be. Click on a link in an email.
You wait, really?
Even if it's like,
so you didn't click on my website link I sent you?
Oh, I had my wife.
Yeah, no, it was the one thing I clicked.
But like, if I get something for my bank or a credit card, I'm like, instead of using this link, I'm going to go to the website. I'll log in.
I go into the app. That's what I do, because this is what happened: is that it took me to the internet out of the app and then said re-enter your password, and I was like because it's in the internet and they need to know it's me, but then of course that's where they got it,
right? Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, Charlie, what a nightmare that was for everyone to know. Okay, wait, one last part of the story and we'll get back on track. So this guy that one time did a pilot of mine, he's a muscle man guy, and we went on a date for this pilot I did for Comedy Central about dating on the streets, and he writes me. I haven't seen this was 2015 2016 he writes me. Maybe 2017. He writes me and was like, hey, so you really into crypto? Remember me? And sends the picture of us on set. And I was like, oh no, I got hacked. And he was like, yeah, but then you posted this video. And a video of me saying, hey guys, I'm back and loving crypto more than ever.
What?
And he was like, yeah, but then you posted this. And I was like, yeah, that's a joke. Like, I'm a comedian. He was like, yeah, but you kept talking about the crypto, and I was like, yeah, I was hacked. So it's like, this guy, I had to block him. He's accosting me. He's accusing me of loving crypto.
But was he looking for a friend in crypto?
Like, he said, oh, I like crypto too. So I guess he wants to be mutual pals or making open an account.
Invested. He's like, no, you said you liked it.
So he bought stock once I said I liked it. Oh my God. Okay.
I feel like everybody who's into crypto is just yearning for one friend to give a shit.
Oh my God, so they can talk about it.
Yes.
It's the same with people, like my friend came over and was trying to get me into Seeking Sister Wives, because I don't know if anybody else watches it. So I managed to get through 20 minutes and we somehow had a 3-hour conversation about 20 minutes of one episode. And I was like, yeah, I can't watch this. This is insane.
You can't do a whole episode with you.
Yeah, it's been 20 minutes. I've seen two couples and there's like a ton of them.
Oh boy.
Okay, Charlie.
Yes.
Reset, 6 out of 10. Here's what I want to know. What would make up the 6 and what would lack the 4? Like, what even gets you to a 6? You could have said 3.
Right.
So what, and if that was a 3, I'd say what dragged you down. But 6 is the above, no, you said 5.
I said 5.
It was an original 6. Yeah. You said 5. So 5 is either way.
Yeah.
So what would bring you to a 5 and what could sway it?
I would say, like, at the moment, there's so many, like, various life stressors going on in, like, my life.
Oh.
I have a wife and 2 kids.
Yeah.
And we're living here in Los Angeles. Work has not been forthcoming.
Nope.
As we earlier talked about, my pilot didn't go anywhere this year. So that was a sort of a letdown. And as you also know, there's no business being done over the summers.
No.
So that's has been a very hard time to be
out. It's been a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, if it weren't for Norm, I'm kicking myself onto the streets. I'm evicting me from here.
Yeah.
No, it's no joke.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's scary because you were on a show and writing and everything.
Yeah.
And previous to the pandemic, there was all this momentum. And then what happened is everything stopped down. Then when we started back up, everyone was like, well, we're going to go in this direction instead. And
right.
you're with these people that are already famous. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, the people you used to not be able to get. And now you have John Hamm available for all the commercials.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We can't even book commercials anymore.
Right.
You know? So absolutely. It's like, yeah. But I have to say, I can't relate too much because the two kids is a whole different
It is a bag. Whole different scenario.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, my daughter's 16. My son is 11.
These are nasty ages.
It is rough sometimes.
A 16-year-old daughter
yeah.
in L.A.?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. My parents couldn't. They'd shit me off.
No.
They'd be like, no.
Entirely. Like, I'm afraid to live in this city. Like, I am a little, small-town country boy
yes.
from the North Woods of Wisconsin. And so for me to even be on the highway and just look at all, this is more cars than were in my town.
Yeah.
Like, this is terrifying to me all the time. I don't like crowds and I don't like noises, so I don't go to concerts.
Yeah, I hate
and
concerts.
Like that. And so my daughters are like, will you drive me down to my friend's house in, you know, Los Feliz on this Friday night? I'm like, no.
Oh my God. My mom would never take us anywhere.
I'm not driving you to the city.
No.
On a Friday night, you're 16. No, thank you.
Hell no.
Yeah, that's like Adventures in Babysitting stuff.
Oh, what a great movie.
And if she had like Elizabeth Shue with her, then maybe I'd let her go.
If she had current day Elizabeth Shue, who's a lot more responsible
yeah.
with her?
Yes.
Yeah, she's not doing any fast and loose moves anymore, okay? She cares about the kids. No, I know what you mean. It's very like, I don't even want to go anywhere on a Friday night because I tell Norm, I'm like, everybody drinks and drives and they're all going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not wrong. I'm not
yeah.
wrong. People, I'm watching people do it. And
yeah.
then, and I'm like, you know, I'm always the one that's like, oh, you okay to get home? I'm that person. I'm sure you are too, where you're like, oh, is everybody,
no,
are you?
No.
See, it's usually the small town that we're a little more...
Yeah.
I found I was because in my town, you would drink and drive all the time. So
absolutely.
That's how I became
a person.
It was
just normal.
So you're asking people
we
to drink and drive.
We did it as a
drive.
Game.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Charlie.
Get some road beers.
So you're on the wrong side.
I was. Terribly. Like, I was... I used to drink and drive so much that it was... I mean, I shouldn't be alive. I did the one wrong way on a highway. Wrong part
oh
of a
God.
Separated highway.
Oh, my God.
And I saw another car go by me in the other lane, like we were on a two-lane road. And I went, oh no, and got off. This was as like a 19-year-old or something.
Guys, I know I was silent for a second there. It's because I was pretty mad. I can't with drinking and driving because I'm not a confident driver. So I don't even like one drink in driving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... I'm just not confident. I'm not saying I'm necessarily a bad driver, but I'm not the best driver because I'm nervous.
Yeah.
So I can't. I think that's why I'm so anti-drinking driving because I'm like, it's me that's going to die. You're all loosey-goosey. I'm the one that's going to get creamed here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I was like, it was just so normalized for me growing up because
yeah.
I grew up in the middle of nowhere. The only places that we drank as kids were like out in the woods.
Yep. Yeah.
And there's no other way to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're not wrong.
And so, but like when I got to Chicago, it was still that same sort of a deal where drinking and driving was not a big deal.
Wait, did you have a car in Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because
I feel like hardly anyone did.
Yeah, I did because I moved from Wisconsin to Chicago and I picked that Midwestern city as like a halfway step to New York, L.A., so I could get used to a big city, but
yeah.
I was close enough to get home if I needed to.
Yeah.
And I did not acclimate to Chicago very well, like as a city person. I don't think I rode a train for the first 2 or 3 years that I was there. And I remember being on a bus. I got on a bus downtown after seeing a Second City show, and I had a panic attack because I realized I don't know how to get off. I don't know how the buses work. How does this bus know where I'm going?
Oh, my God.
And I'm with these other improv people who are all comfortable and fine. And I was like, I don't know where this is going to leave me.
Wait, and so then I started to see people
pulling the chain. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, there we go. That makes a little more sense. I was like, how did he get off? And I was like, this is the movie Speed, but different.
Yeah. Stop this bus now.
It's kind of the PG movie Speed, where it's just about trying to stop a bus to get off safely.
Yeah, one like overweight, sweaty Wisconsinite just trying to barrel his way out of a moving bus.
And you know, if this isn't a Blockbuster, what is? And well, bring back Blockbuster also, guys.
But honestly, I probably would have just ridden to the end of the line and then found my own way home rather than asking anybody for help.
Some of those lines you go to the end of, you're not getting home at all. Are you nuts?
My parents once when they came down and I was like, we're going to go to the Museum of Science and Industry. And
that's the red line. Oh, yeah.
I just looked at a map and I'm like, okay, this is one of my second times probably on a train. And I was like, well, we'll just take the red line to the end, 95th and Dan Ryan. And then we just have to walk like a half a mile.
Oh, my God. It's a no-go, guys.
No.
That's bad news.
Immediately accosted by a man on the street who was saying, give me a penny. And he grabbed me and I said, don't touch me. And then he started to fight with me. And a lady who worked at the museum pulled off the road and said, get in my car. You guys should not be here. And she drove us to the museum.
What were your parents thinking? Where they were like, you're moving
terrified.
Home?
They were terrified. And my sister, my younger sister was probably 11 or 12. That was with us. It was just standing around. She was also on the L. I looked over at her once and she was kissing the handle, one of the poles of the L train. Oh, she'd never been on a train
my
before.
My God. I'm horrified. So, okay, wait. So you go to Chicago.
Yes.
It's this big shock. Like, I came to Chicago very young. It was also for me to see. It was my first time experiencing this, like, living in the States. But I felt the same way of, like, New York or L.A., like, which one? And it was a good pit stop because it was so well known for its improv and everything like that and training and everything, which it lived up to for sure. I definitely learned a lot while I was in Chicago. But then coming to L.A., I really liked it because there was more room and it reminded me more of back home.
Yeah.
Did you have any of that? Because it was more, like, I grew up in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So here, everything's more spread out and you're like, I didn't feel as much city hustle and bustle as I did in Chicago.
Oh, I definitely, like, we moved to the Valley. We found a school district that we wanted our kids to go to, the elementary school.
Yeah.
And so we moved into an apartment in those boundaries. For the first couple of years, it was the four of us crammed in this tiny two-bedroom apartment. So right up in like the Valley Village, North Hollywood area.
Yeah.
And I would never even go into the city
unless
I was going to perform.
Yeah.
So I only went to a few places. That was the same way I handled Chicago. Like, I lived right on like Addison and Bell.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I only drove to I.O. and I drove to different theaters and bars and my grocery stores, and that was it.
I made sure in Chicago I was in walking distance of everything, and I had a bike.
It was great to have
it. It was great to have that bike.
Yeah.
But then they would get stolen every time. So it was great to have a bike for a week.
Yes. Aw. That was a good city to ride a bike in, I thought.
I know bikes were stolen because somebody once gave me a stolen bike and it didn't register with me until about a month after I had it, and I went, wait, I think this is stolen.
Yeah, it has a guy's name Mark written on it. Like,
and a man named Mark is on it. And it won't get off, quite frankly.
But when we were here, and once we moved out to LA, I still sort of kept it pretty close to home. And now where we are in our little house, I rarely leave. I've become super like agoraphobic during the pandemic.
Yeah, but where you are is also, you don't need to leave because you have, that's what I was saying when you first came in, when I was asking where you live, you have everything.
Yeah.
So it's like here, I have to go, I'm in between neighborhoods of like grocery store and this and that. So I have to leave and I kind of like it. It's forcing me to go because I'm a homebody too.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I need to socialize. Clearly, it affects my self-esteem, as I had mentioned. And it's like, I have a big week of podcasting coming up and like getting ahead on some episodes. So I'm very excited and feeling very positive and good about that. But I will say about being a homebody, there is a plus to it because you have to be able to sit with yourself. And you can't always have that instant gratification of an audience to hold court with, or like people to laugh or whatever. Cause like, you know, Norm barely laughs at me. I don't know if your family laughs at you. I find the laughter dies in the house for a lot of people. It's hard to keep those bits going in the pandemic.
Yeah, different audiences too.
It's just a different, it's a harder audience. Yeah. It's a tough, I mean, you got, look at your kids, 16 to 11, you got a tough crowd.
It is tough. Although my daughter did have a great time. We created a mural for 9/11 yesterday on our dry erase board, which was happy 9/11.
Oh, wow. One way to handle it.
Towers falling down, people coming out of them.
Oh, my God. Charlie, you have to send me a picture of this.
I think I posted it on Twitter this
morning. Oh, did you? Oh, I didn't see it. I've been on. I gotta see this. Oh, my God.
My daughter has is accumulating sort of a darker sense of humor, which overlaps with mine pretty well.
That's great. Did she like AP Bio? Did she like?
Yeah,
because that's part of like definitely the age group.
It was difficult to get them to watch the final season.
Really, they were sick of you.
I guess they were like over it.
Oh, okay. I shot a commercial with the what's his name, Eddie.
Oh, sure.
Recently, he's the best. Yeah.
Oh, he's wonderful.
He's the best. Yes. I'm really into him.
Such a positive person.
Yeah, he really is. And we were talking about Mike O'Brien. He came into the podcast like a month or two ago.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so it was like, he was really sweet. And I was like, how did you like working that job? And he's like, I loved it. He's like, everyone was the best. We all had the best time. And I believe it. I'm like, I don't know, maybe you got some scoop. But I was like, there's some good energy there, and that is always a confidence booster when you have somewhere to be.
Yeah.
Somebody is requiring a talent of yours that you can deliver pretty effortlessly. Right. Like your role, and I know you had the writing too, but like your role is so you. It's like I've seen your improv. Oh my, 18 years ago I first saw you or something, like a long time ago. I know I've seen you here at IO and stuff, so I definitely am familiar with your work. And when I saw you on it, I said to Norma, I was like, oh, it's my friend Charlie. And I was like, yeah, that's him. Like, to a T.
It was actually, like, that's how I got that role.
Really?
Mike was, had sold AP Bio, and he'd let me read the pilot script before he started shopping it around.
Okay.
So I got to give some notes on that. And then once it was purchased, they were doing the first, like, network table read before they were going to start shooting the pilot.
Okay.
And he had three or four of us, of his friends, come in and read some of the uncast roles, some of the students. And one of them was this coach character.
Oh, my God.
Who was,
God,
like, one page, supposed to be, like, a, you know, 50s, 60s-year-old guy.
Yeah.
And no jokes. But I came in with just my big Wisconsin accent and attitude. I put a toothpick in my mouth. And, like, just bellowed out. And, like, I killed in the room. And Bob Greenblatt, who was the head of NBC at the time, was like, hire that guy to be the coach.
You never know. Like, I know someone, a friend of mine from Canada, who did the scratch track of a movie, like the initial table read, right? Mm-hmm. And then they were going to cast, but it was like to start with the animation.
Sure.
And they just used her track as is.
Oh,
so she just got paid a fat stack of money for this movie.
Didn't have to re-record it.
Just only little bits.
Nice.
Because she did that. She has experience in voiceover, but she did that well and, you know, really gave it her all on the read and everything. And they were like, yeah, great. And I'm like, I can't even fathom how smart that is. I phone it in every chance I get.
Well, that worked for me because I had zero on-camera experience. I didn't know anything about it, but I know how to work a room. I know how to get laughs in a room, especially when it's one joke, you know, a couple of lines that I wasn't in charge of, like, leading the whole scene.
Well, it's also low pressure for you because, I mean, you tell me, but it's like, it doesn't seem like you were going in there being like 50 or 60. It's going to be me. Like, it sounds like you were just like, this is my friend's show. I'm going to help him out and I'm going to, like, let's have some fun with it and see where it gets me.
Absolutely.
Like,
I had no idea that I could be cast for the job.
There you go. Because they say this other, if they, years away from you, you're like, why would you think, oh, I'll be able to convince them otherwise?
I did a lot of, like, preparation work in the 2 days beforehand just because I didn't want to fuck things up for Mike.
I take it all very seriously.
Do a good job for him. I'm sitting at a, you know, I'm not at the table. I'm behind the table where, you know, Patton Oswalt and Glenn Howerton and all these guys are at the table.
Yeah.
And I'm in the corner of the room and I'm just like, don't mess this up. You know, like my page is page 17 of the script or whatever. And from page one, I'm like, be ready, be ready.
Oh my God. Ready. I'm the same as you. Whenever I do a script read for a friend, like, and I mean just a casual one, like so I've did a few over Zoom and whatever. I always read the script before, even if it's feature.
Yeah.
I always always read the entire script before, and if I have a character or whatever, I'll like try to highlight or mark it down or have my finger on the page, like same as you or whatever, so that you're like, because you never want to be the one where everyone's like Alana and you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, hey, what? You know what I mean?
Do you do the same thing for auditions? Do you put that much effort into your auditions?
No, God, no. Me neither. Because I can't, because that's disposable.
Absolutely.
You, half the time, if you know the casting director, they already know what you can do. So you're not like, not that you're not trying to wow them, but they're bringing you back in because you're you and they like you.
Right.
So stick close to that is how I look at it, unless specified in the script. If it says something else, like, she talks with this accent or she talks really fast or like whatever. Okay, fine. I'll change what I'm doing. But otherwise, you're getting me plain shirt, hair down. You're getting me as is. Yeah. Because, oh my God. And I get that it's called acting when you do something other than you. I'm not a good actor.
Yeah, but you're not, you're trying to be cast, right?
Yeah.
That's different than acting. Like,
yeah.
You're trying to fulfill a part that they already have conceived in their mind.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's, yeah, it's like, I'm not trying to sell anyone on anything other than me. It's like you said, you know how to work a room. I know how to work a room.
Yeah.
And I do that by being exactly me, because I'll say this, at least they'll fucking remember.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Right, and you'll be in their head for the next time they're looking for someone who you do fit.
Oh my God, I've gotten jobs, like when I would do stuff at Funny or Die a million years ago when I first moved here. So like 11 years ago, a while ago. Little web things, it's like, you know, I'm going to give it my all for $250. Who cares, right? I'm going to give it my all, be super funny. Cut to 10 years later, those guys now all work in different companies and production companies, directors and this and that. And it's like, I get called in for Punch Up. I get called in for writer's rooms. I get called in for hosting stuff because they're like, oh yeah, Alana. Like I remember seeing her all that time ago and I didn't even work with some of them. You know what I mean? But they're like, yeah, that thing. And then they like register it and clock it and then they'll just remember.
That's great.
And then like 5 years later, they're like, she's the one. I'm waiting for a marriage proposal for she's the one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I want them 5 years from now to be like, that's the woman I need to marry. That's what I've been auditioning for, weddings.
Weddings?
Now, are you good at auditioning? Because I'm terrible.
No, not very well. Okay. I'm bad. And that's why I've gotten it down to like the amount of effort that it takes for me to feel comfortable doing it and that I've done a good job. I don't want to put any more into it than the likelihood that I'll get this. And I don't book a lot.
Yes.
So I'm like, this has to be short and done.
But it sounds like you have, and I don't know, because you said with AP Bio, kind of, it came about in a backdoor way, a stranger way. I have that same thing too, where it's like, my career has not been traditional, but I've landed really cool, great things, but couldn't tell you how I got from point A to point B. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I had no reps or anything.
That's what how great. And your friend's like, can you play a 6-year-old janitor for two lines? And you're like, yes, I can. And then you pop in a toothpick and book the role. Yeah. Like, come on. That's crazy.
That was great. And the writing, the experience of writing that show was phenomenal. That was the dream job.
Oh, my God. Of course. Yeah. Isn't that nice, too, where it's like you got your dream job, while living in LA, having responsibility for a family. Like, I got a dream job when I was like 24, the star of this kids' TV show where they're like, go big. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. For a first job, I was like, this is fucking amazing. It went 3 seasons, but it was like, I blew it. I didn't have the know-how. I didn't have the appreciation. I thought it was always going to be this way. So to get something later in life where you're like, oh my God, I have this cool job, but I care about it. I'm going to put an effort. It provides for my family. All that, you know what I mean? You're like, now this is the dream job. Then you're like cocky and you're like, this is just the first job.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I never had that first job. Like this was really my only thing other than live comedy.
And being on it too.
Yeah.
Wow, Charlie, come on. That's huge.
It was, we were literally like counting the weeks that we had left to stay in LA before we were like out of money and we got to go back to the Midwest.
Yeah.
And then this came along.
But good for you doing, and yeah. I'm going to say this, good for you for being willing to do that, because you got to do what you got
to
do.
And well, we're back to the same position now.
There you go. Well, listen, listen. Yes, but then maybe you'll be put back in that same position that you were in of the of it turning around.
Well, I'm also like I want to move back to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Really. I want to live in the woods. I want to be by my parents who are getting older and my sisters and all of my, I guess I was going to say nieces and nephews, but I have one niece and one nephew.
So my niece and nephew.
My wife's not super stoked about that, but I'm like, writer's rooms are mostly all virtual now.
You can
They're
go anywhere.
They're not going back. Right. And like, I'm trying to sell an animated show, which I could also do from anywhere.
Yep.
And I would rather live somewhere where I can, the money that I make can do more for my family than just being sunk into living here.
You can always get on a plane. Like, that's how I look at it. Like, sometimes I'll still do work in Canada, or like if Trump won, we were
For the second term,
yeah.
Take off?
Yeah, we were like, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whatever. But I will say that I'm glad we stayed for now. But if life-wise too much shit hits the fan in America, I'll turn my back on this place.
Sure.
You think I will?
Why not?
Yeah, why not? If I had kids, I'd already be in Canada. Oh, I can tell you that much right now. If I had kids, I would already be in Canada. Because I'm too scared. With healthcare, it all seems like a mess.
It's a lot.
It does, like, you know, you fuck up one thing on paperwork and turns out you don't have insurance. Yes, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like, that's so dangerous.
All the years in Chicago where I was working, like, I kept my toe in comedy, but I was just working to raise my family, you know?
Yeah.
I was working in advertising and marketing as a copywriter, and the insurance was terrible.
Yeah.
It was so expensive to use. So we were like, please, nobody ever get sick or need anything. We're very lucky that way. Once I got out here and I have like Writers Guild insurance.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's very good
and
insurance.
Cheap.
Yeah.
And good.
Yes.
Yeah. I never got on the Writers Guild insurance because I didn't work consistently enough where I thought I could keep it. And I didn't want to keep getting on and off insurance because they had to switch your doctors. It's like, oh my God.
That's a pain.
It is such a pain. And like, finally we're on this insurance that it's like probably going to stay this way or whatever. And I'm like, it's the first time since I've lived here that I feel settled. We're in this place. You know what I mean? We're not going anywhere. It's the first time that I felt settled. I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I finally, after all these years, feel like I belong somewhere and
That's
have
nice.
A home somewhere. Yeah. It didn't, I always loved LA, but there was kind of one foot out the door.
Like Randy Jackson.
Yeah, here we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Is that his
about.
Name? Not Randy Jackson. Who's the singer who sings I Love LA? Is it Randy Jackson?
Gotta
He's
be
a
Randy
pitcher,
Jackson.
Randy Jackson.
Randy Jackson's from...
Randy Newman.
Oh. Because is it...
Toy Story music.
You got a friend.
Exactly. I love LA.
Okay, see, dedicated to me. Now, would your family just go bananas if you came home?
Well, my family doesn't go bananas. They're very reserved.
Best response you could have given me. Well, guys, stop going bananas.
Yeah, we're glad to have you home. That's what they'd say. So nice to see you.
Wait, Charlie, who's your team? Your football team?
Packers.
Okay, what'd you think of the game?
Oh, it was rough.
Yeah, it was. I have an Aaron Rodgers jersey.
Oh,
I had
really?
It on. I love him.
Really?
I do.
I would not buy an Aaron Rodgers jersey all these years.
I had it from a million years ago because I had a crush on him.
Sure.
And nothing else to say about it.
He's like, he's attractive in a way that
no, he's
a
out
lot
of control
of
now.
Women have said they find him attractive, but I don't get it.
He's out of, first of all, he's out of control now, and that kind of makes him more attractive.
Really? Being sort of crazy?
Yes.
Really?
Because he's unhinged. When you show up to a practice looking like Nick Cage and Con Air, yeah, you better believe Alana Johnston's tuning in.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt if he throws an accent on.
But listen, he's having, it's going to be a rough. He's no one to throw to. It's
not
good.
Exactly.
It's not good.
He's got all the money. and he doesn't have the tools he needs.
Yeah. We go. I'm sorry. I hate to go off topic about that, but whenever there's a football fan, I like to check in because I genuinely like football, and I have my couple of teams I will always watch. Packers is one of them.
It stung really hard to lose the season opener to the Vikings. That's my most hated team.
I know. Yeah. That's why I got interested into sports, because of the gossip. Like when Norm filled me in about like the backstory, the rivalries, like it makes it 10 times more fun. Like yesterday, everything mattered in that game.
Yeah.
Because it's okay. Great. Here's a great self-esteem example. If the Rams lost, Norm would be like, I'm at a 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'd be like, cool, you were enjoying yourself in the game. You got some work done.
I don't have that attachment necessarily. And Norm's a good example. He's one of the only heavy sports users.
Yes, yes.
Men that I know who I can talk with about sports and not feel uncomfortable, because I don't feel as invested as most men.
No, Norm has a bit of everything in all the teams. So he's a casual person to talk to about it. He's not going to talk your ear off, and then you're like, I have no idea who he's saying.
Yeah. Well, I don't follow like between season stuff. I don't care about trading.
Oh,
I don't really
yeah.
care about anything. I just watch the games.
Yeah.
And I like it. Like I played football, state champion in high school.
Okay, guys. Everybody calm down.
But I was like raised by jocks. I know my dad was a state champion wrestler. My mom would have been a state champion something if they had sports for girls back then. But she did a lot.
I don't mean to laugh at that. I'm sorry.
But she does, you know, my whole life she's done like, she used to do like bar league softball and things like that.
She's very athletic.
Yeah, she runs every day. Wow. Even now in her 70s, she's playing pickleball. She plays in tennis leagues on the state level. She plays golf on the state level. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
My sister was a three-letter athlete in high school. She coaches volleyball now.
Wait.
So I grew up this little, but I here's me, like
a comedian,
raised
like
by jocks, very sensitive little boy, who's also like, I'm queer, I'm bisexual, and that wasn't talked about because we were a very Catholic family.
Oh my God, of course.
And so my only way to survive was like to be good at those things. And even though I was terrified, I had so much anxiety playing sports. I'm like, I have to do well, least at one.
Would you do, you played in high school. What did you do after high school?
I went to college to play Division III football, and I never went. I went to, like, my friend Tim and I were going to go and play for University of River Falls in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And in the summer after he graduated, this is the countryest thing I can tell you, he decided to not go to college and instead buy his grandpa's farm. And he stayed in our hometown.
Of course.
And farmed. So I went and I was like, oh, I don't know that I want to do this without my friend.
Yeah.
We had just come in, you know, we just won state. It was like my mind was sucked into that experience.
Yeah.
Once I got to college, I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah. And I don't have to do it.
I don't want to go hang out with a bunch of, like,
yeah.
I hung out with a lot of football guys in high school because they were my friends for my whole life.
And you don't have that many options otherwise.
Right.
And small town.
The toxic masculinity of locker rooms and whatnot were so terrifying to me and anxiety inducing. The idea of doing that with a bunch of strangers from other high schools, like the worst of all jocks from everywhere, terrified me enough that I didn't want to go. I was like,
you know,
I
as
like
a woman, it terrifies me too.
Smoke cigarettes. Oh, yeah,
as a woman, it terrifies me too. I can tell you that much. Where you're like, cool, Charlie, you probably save yourself from becoming a rapist. Yeah. You're just like, not my dudes.
Yeah, I had so much. I was growing up in that area. Like, I was around so much of that I just silently stood by and like witnessed. And I'd
what
be
else
in
can
so
you
many
do?
Conversations where people would be like, you know, those types of people, or, you know, they'd be homophobic or racist or whatever, or misogynist to me. Like, cause you get it, right? You're a fellow white guy from Wisconsin. Yeah. You feel the same way. I was like, oh no.
Oh
no.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah. And I became very much like, oh, I can't show any of this stuff.
No.
And if I want to be good at creative things, I have to be good at everything. So I was like class president, student council president, athletic association president, National Honor Society.
Oh my God.
I was just in charge of everything in my high school.
oh, I feel so bad, that pressure to like overcompensate or something like that.
It was a lot. Yeah, I had to be beyond reproach because I was like, oh, someone's just going to call me a fat faggot sometime.
Can I ask a very personal question? Yeah. What was your family's reaction in you coming out to them? Or did you
not? 2 years ago?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
It was very recent.
Because I remember I read on Twitter and I was like, here we go. That's how you get it done. You rip it off like a Band-Aid. You let everybody know and everybody goes, sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
But my folks are not on Twitter. Not
Why I said, that's why I was like, I know. And I'm like, I feel like I'm really pressing you, but I was like, I gotta know.
It was, I had decided very early, like I knew my whole life that I was bisexual from like 13.
Yeah.
When I found that word in a one of my dad's letters to Penthouse. I saw the word bisexual. I was like, that's the thing. That was how conservative my family was. My dad used print porn.
Wow. Okay, keep going. I'm listening. Here we go.
A part of my anxiety was I knew that I'd never lie about it. If someone asked me about it, I would not be able to fake it.
Oh my God. So that's the problem with the bros.
Yeah. Cause
of course
it comes up a lot sometimes as jokes and things like that. Yeah. And I was like, they're going to figure it out and they're going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like this was seriously in the 80s and 90s where like gay bashing was a joke, not a joke.
Yeah.
You know, it was happening a lot in my rural town and stuff. And I saw the kids who couldn't pass be sort of brutalized by my peers.
My town too.
Yeah. It was rough. So I just sort of avoided talking about it.
Yeah.
And no one ever assumed anything about me other than that I was a polite, quiet, straight man.
Yeah, yeah.
Into Chicago when I was doing comedy. When I met my wife, I told her before we got married, and we didn't talk about it again for a long time. We got very quickly into raising our family. And
that's all your time right there. Absolutely. It's not even time to think about anything else. It's kids and everything.
It got pushed to the back burner so much that it became a problem.
Yeah.
And every time that I did try to bring it up. My wife wasn't very comfortable talking about it either. And it would be like, well, we have to start to divorce.
Yeah.
Just to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, then I'll never talk about it. And so it just buried it down.
Right back to where we were. Yeah.
Not to mention here, I'll give you a little juicy tidbit, but in my teens and 20s, I had a very, as much as you can in Northern Wisconsin, I had a very like a cruisy love life where I would like get performatively drunk, drive drunk somewhere and like hook up with random people.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that I could be okay with it. If it was completely separate from my regular life. And then of course, being very Catholic, I was very guilty about that. It was evil to have these thoughts and all of that stuff. So that just built and built and built. And we would try very factually. I tried to be like open. I'd tell my kids like in National Coming Out Day, I'm bisexual. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, what? We're children.
What? Listen, I'm not making light of things, but what? We're children is the best reaction you could have given me.
Oh, man. And also, like, in the years that would come later, I'd be like, just to remind you guys, I'm bisexual. I'd be like, they'd be surprised every year. We're like, I told you this last year. They forgot.
Oh, my God. I'm loving the kids and all this. Now, I said, I bashed your kids earlier. I'm back on board with the kids. Honestly, making a huge to-do by forgetting every year. It's not even passive aggressive. It's just hilarious.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you just straight up don't listen to me. Like, probably anything I say, you don't listen to me. Let alone something that some people might find interesting.
Yeah, get your freaking gummy packets out of my bed, and I'm half gay.
But most importantly, the gummies. Okay, so we're on reminders, and then you had the post. Did you talk to your wife before you were like, I'm going to post?
At that time, this was like 2017, something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And maybe 2018. So we had two things going on. I was working in AP Bio, mm-hmm. and I would notice in the writer's room, that I have to keep editing myself because I'd be like, oh, this is going to give something away about myself. And we were all sharing stories.
Oh, of course. You get close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I you know, it wasn't that I was trying to keep it from the people I was working with, but it seemed inappropriate to make that announcement while we're working.
Yeah.
By the way, I have a joke to pitch because I used to suck dick.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's okay that I make this joke.
Yeah. You know, that's one way to introduce a joke in a professional writer's room. there's a couple ways to do it. That's the preferred one.
But like in between the first season and the second season, I took that first season as just a way to soak in as much knowledge as I could.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I have to make this known so that it is, so that I can bring my whole self to this job. Everybody knows who I am.
Because otherwise it's like just as a comedian, preferences aside, like as a comedian, it's like you have to ask yourself, like, am I bringing all my experiences to the table because I got hired because I have something different to say than this person over here?
That's right.
But am I saying all of it? And it does open the door to different kinds of content and stuff like that because you're like, I have the understanding.
Right.
Like, no, trust me. I am right about this. You know, I'm not just like making it up.
I think part of that is the reason why I would avoid stand up and solo performance for so long.
Oh my God, of course. Because that you have to talk about yourself.
Absolutely.
Have to.
Yeah. First few years of stand-up is always just telling people who you are.
Bit so about me.
Yeah. But so I told that cast, I mean, that writer's room.
Yeah.
And it became, I just told a few people individually, and that was the first step. And then in the one of the seasons, Mike O'Brien started to book us occasional shows at the Lyric Hyperion.
Okay.
And so just the writers and some of the performers on the show would come and we'd do a night
of variety. Yeah.
And so for the very first one that we did, I just wrote 10 minutes of stand-up where I came out to my coworkers.
Oh my God.
And that's the way that sort of became bigger and bigger.
Genius.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Very easy, that false vulnerability
and,
that we have.
And you're not on the clock.
Right.
Like that, but still to the people that need to know.
Yeah.
Because also one-on-one conversations, you know a lot of people. You're very well liked. This is going to take some time.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Social media helps with that as well.
Social media helps with that because otherwise, like, you know, we're picking up the phone, and this guy wants to talk about it for 20 minutes. This lady won't shut up for an hour.
There's a lot less of that than you'd think.
Really?
Reach out.
I got you on a full podcast here. Yeah, we're up to an hour here yammering on about it. What are you talking about? I'm loving this. I listen, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, I like a good story of like somebody in one position and then being able to overcome a lot of things to then get to the next level. And no matter where in their life, no matter where anybody is, what stage they're in right now, you need people like you where they go, well, if they can do it, I can do it at some point when everybody's ready. And it sounds like you were ready earlier in life. Like when you said you told your wife, it sounds like you were ready to say it. And maybe if it's not well received, in any news you can give someone, if it's not well received, you're like, okay, I'll put a lid right back on this.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll save this joke for 10 years from now. But I think it's like what you did was really brave because life's too short.
Sure.
What are we going to do?
Well, and
you know what I mean?
Yeah. I also was like, okay, I'm on TV. I'm in every other episode of this show. And I never had anyone that I knew of growing up who was a bisexual male icon a role model, and certainly not one that was like an overweight white moron from northern Wisconsin. You know, I'm not David Bowie. I'm not Harry Styles. I'm not some
his words. Model. I was going to say he's like David Bowie, but Charlie, you want to take the words out of my mouth and throw them away? You go nuts.
I'm not this lithe sort of in between genders, sort of a bisexual man that is accepted.
We'll just say on the outside looking in, it's unexpected. I think for a lot, it's just unexpected. A lot of people didn't see it coming.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I went through one of my first improv classes. This was as terrible as improv was in the year 2000. The instructor went around and guessed who was straight and gay.
Was it Charna?
No, this was a whole different organization.
Wow!
It was at the... Have you ever heard of the Players Workshop of the Second City?
No.
It was the original training center for the Second City. It was a separate business that Josephine Forsberg started to train the players at Second City because Second City didn't have a training center. And then when they became this big business, and I think the first time that they were purchased... The company that bought them said, well, I'm not going to buy this other business. We'll just start our own training center.
Of course.
And so that lady's, Josephine Forsberg's improv training center, they took her curriculum and started the Second City training center.
Okay, well, that's not cool. The idea of having your own training center is great, but to steal somebody else's work, come on.
And they let her legally keep the name Players Workshop of the Second City until she died, until Josephine Forsberg died. And... in my year 2000 web crawler search, my Lycos search, that came up first in searching for Second City classes.
Oh, my God.
And I signed up for them, and I moved to Chicago. And I went to this improv class in this rundown theater in, like, Lincoln and Irving.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is Second City? This place is a dump.
This place is a dump. I can't believe you got duped.
Yeah. And like two other guys in the class were like, yeah, I thought this was the wrong place. And then someone's
but
like,
you've already
that's
paid.
Downtown.
But you've already paid. You have to do the class.
And move to the city.
So wait, were you gay or were you straight? Your accusation.
He, not even a question.
Was totally anyone accused of being gay and then they were like, I'm straight?
It was the only, there was just one guy who he wanted to be gay because he was attracted to him and because the teacher was gay. And so he was on a fishing expedition. Oh. It was uncomfortable.
And okay.
One time he told us he would go on to these speeches and stories about his life that he just wanted to share, these dumb monologues.
Of course.
But they were like, he would often get into the ones about how he saw all of his friends die from AIDS. But he told us a story once about how he had a big beard. About how he woke up after a night of crazy sex. And he went into the bathroom and he saw his beard was moving. He looked closer and he had crabs infested his beard.
I'm out. No, listen. I love the accusation of gay or straight. I think that's hilarious. I'm going to take that for sure. I'm going to take that.
Just a nice warm-up.
Listen, I'm going to do it to an audience being like, gay, straight. I think it's a great idea. But, you know, getting crabs on purpose to tell a class is crazy.
That's terrible.
Charlie, pains me to say this. We've neared the end of the podcast.
Boy,
I know
through.
I'm disgusted with how short this is. You started the podcast out of fake six, which turned out to be a real five.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling now after really getting into it? And just so you know, we accept same, lower, higher, no judgment.
Okay.
No judgment.
You know, just with the, I'll go back up to a six.
Okay.
You know, the act of getting all of the stressors out in conversation is such a relief that it usually takes the edge off for me.
Okay, so I started, I think I might have said six, or seven. Let's put it in between. Let's say 6.5 is what I started at because I kind of wavered, I believe, after you did. I was like, well, you're not the only one. But I was like, okay, not on my show. Wavering around here, changing your score. But I will say I'm 100%. If I wasn't at a 7 or 7.5, I certainly am now because I am honored you would share so much with me. You'll notice I didn't bring anything up. I have the info, but I was like, hey, remember I said I was like, whatever we talk about, it's casual, it's whatever.
Sure.
And I really appreciate you sharing because one, I always like to get people's backstories. There's so much I just found out about you that I didn't know. And I've known you for years.
Yeah,
I have known you, which is so crazy. But it's like, I feel honored that you would come on the podcast and tell us what's going on. And my dog loves you and we all love you. You are loved in this household.
Thanks so much, Alana. Thanks for having me on. Or
Alana, that's okay.
No, we've known each other for so long. Edit here. Thank you so much, Elena.
Edit here. Okay, you don't actually have that power. Please stop editing the podcast as you go.
I will say just a quick plug at the end of why I'm able to talk about this stuff is therapy and medication.
Okay, I'm on medication too. Yeah. I'm obsessed with mine.
I will say this. Everybody knows on the podcast, I'm pro meds, monitored while in therapy yes. with a doctor. Yes. Okay. So let me just reiterate that, because I feel like I've definitely had people go off about meds and I'm like, okay, but let's get the full picture of how we work meds. Yeah. So I'm in complete agreement. I think I can run this podcast now because I got meds sorted yeah. when the pandemic first hit. For 3 months, I couldn't even talk. And then I was like, hit up my psychiatrist and I was like, I think we have an issue. And we sorted it out and the podcast came back and fantastic. Now I'm famous.
Congratulations on being famous.
Charlie, it's been a slice, and we do have Gatorades available in the fridge.
Oh, wonderful. Good.
Okay, perfect. Bye. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself.